Wrapping up another week, and it is Friday. Wow. Okay, let's take a look at some headlines and get to this review of the latest on the coronavirus situation, crisis, international geopolitical bankster globalist tool by which the economy has been decimated and will never recover, at least in the configuration it used to occupy for such a long time. The new reset, the great reset, is coming, and things are going to be a lot different. Virginia Governor Northam and his wife have both tested positive. They are infected. Meanwhile, down south, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida has lifted all coronavirus restrictions on all Florida restaurants. He's apparently hoping that some of them will survive, whereas they would have all been suffering. Again, it's just nonstop. The whole economic texture of this country will never reflect what it was. And younger people, under 15, say, will never know what it used to be like. Think about it. Most of them. New Jersey coronavirus public health emergency to remain in effect for another 30 days. Trump said to be, this on Slate.com, escalating his coronavirus lies. Well, not hard to imagine what that story says. U.S. coronavirus. Now the cases have broken through the 7 million mark as 23 states report rising numbers of infected. Most Americans, this is me talking, are obviously eventually going to come into contact with it. Whether they get infected or not, I don't know, but it's clearly going to make its way through most, if not all, of worldwide society. That's just the means this virus has at its disposal to do that, the polybasic cleavage. It's just unstoppable. Small business outwits tyrannical masking bylaws without breaking the rules. So somebody's come up with a way to get around some of the mask rules that they don't like. CDC coronavirus testers pulled out of Minnesota after hostile racist encounters. Just remember, everything in our culture now is being weaponized to one degree or another. Virtually everything. The Georgia State Charlotte game was football was postponed due to coronavirus issues, they said. And there you go. So vitamin D, the last note, is now being talked about, and we knew this, could possibly reduce the risk of coronavirus complications. This is a new study. Vitamin D is a very big player, vitamin D3 to be precise. Henry Nyman is with us tonight to wrap up the week. Henry, welcome back. What are you going to do this weekend? You going golfing with President Trump again?
Not going out that much. Still kind of.
Oh, all right.
Keeping things under control. Actually, I'm getting tested again this weekend. So that's
well, if you get bored, that's what you do these days. You get tested. I get it.
No, I'm actually taking a trip next week. So checking to make sure everything.
Are you going to get your results back in time?
Yeah, they're pretty good. There's this one site, they are collaborating with Rite Aid, and they're pretty much across the country. They've got several sites here in the Pittsburgh area, and I've been tested there a couple of times. Other family members have used them, and they've turned things around in like 2 or 3 days, pretty much across the board. And they streamlined it. I mean, the first time I did it, I was in line for probably 45 minutes or an hour. The last time I did it, which was about a month ago, just drove right up, gave the sample, and emailed me the results. So there.
Now, when you say you gave them the sample, let's be clear on that. You allowed them to invade your body ruthlessly, brutally, and they took their sample.
No, you actually do your own. So they just give you the
DIY
swab.
DIY now. Very good.
You do the you do each nostril. It's about 20 seconds on each one until you twirl around a little bit. Then you break it off, screw the cap on the tube, and give it back to them. So they... That's part of the reason they're able to do it. I mean, it's actually a drive-through, like you go to a drive-through pharmacy to pick up your medication. They do that. They just give you the swab and the tube, and you're sitting in your car. You just drive up. They use the same thing that they usually give you your prescription in the car, and instead they give you a swab and a tube, and you do the swab, you put it back in, you put it back on the little sliding thing, and it slides back in, and that's it. I mean, you show them your ID at the beginning, and you make an appointment ahead of time so they know you're coming, and they keep the samples right that way, and they send you an email with the results, and usually 2 days. So it's not that painful because you're not going back to the, you know, into your brain type of a thing. You do your own, and it's not that invasive. It's not too bad.
They don't have to hold you down anymore. All right, I get it. Now, here, I just got an email. This is interesting. It's a lady I know works in a store. She said, I was kidding with a customer today and told her I'd had coronavirus 3 times. She said, so has my boyfriend. I said, really? She told me his mother is a nurse in Texas, and he had been confirmed 3 times. The first he was pretty sick. The other 2 times, just fatigue. But confirmed 3 times, different times. I hadn't heard of that before. So.
No, I know somebody who was the same thing. I told you about him. He actually was worse the second time. He ended up in the hospital as part of a study. And, that's one of the latest developments. And so I'll talk about that, but I could talk about it right now. That basically, this has a lot of parallels with the swine flu pandemic. And if you recall, back in 2009, I kind of gave some examples of what was happening here in Pittsburgh. And basically, there really wasn't that much activity in the spring. You kind of read about it. There was enough activity to declare a pandemic. And then it was at some summer camps over the summer. And then it started up in the South in August, early August. And I had actually told the parents in mid-August or so that, you know, that swine flu that you heard about in the springtime, that's going to end up here in Fox Chapel. And they all kind of looked at me and it's kind of like, oh, you know, I haven't really heard about it lately. I thought it was over. It was done. And I said, no, it's spreading in the South, and it will definitely come here. It was a pandemic. It's a flu. It spreads easily. It didn't go away, and it will appear at a much higher level in the fall. And then I had 2 kids that were, and one was in middle school, one was in high school at the time. And I kept asking them when school started. I said, well, a lot of kids coughing yet? And they said, yeah, there are a lot of kids coughing, but they, you know, they're not that sick.
It's just a little something going around.
They got the crud. Yeah, the crud. They called it the crud. They didn't know what was going around. They're not really missing school. They cough. They kind of, you know, cough into their elbow type of a thing. And, you know, they don't get that sick. And it goes away after a few days. And I say, well, you know, the only reason you don't know you've got it is they're not sick enough to go to the doctor. So if they're not going to the doctor, they're not getting tested, then you don't know you have it. But the reason you got a whole lot of people coughing in late August, early September, is because they got a mild version of the swine flu. And then things changed dramatically, like in October. And actually, the daughter, the older one, the one that was in high school, was playing soccer, and I was monitoring the soccer team because I'm their media contact and statistician. So I basically I was at all of the games, and I keep track of, you know, who's got a yellow card and when they can come back in the game and da 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 da. So anyway, they were coughing, and they had a few kids that were missing, which is very, very unusual. And this is varsity soccer. You don't usually miss a game. I mean, I had kids doing it for years, and extremely rare that a player is out sick. And there would be multiple kids out. And I know exactly when my daughter got infected. It was an away game. It was on a Tuesday. They were playing Hampton. The wind was blowing. It was raining. They were all, the ones that weren't out on the field were all sitting on the bench. They had this huge plastic sheet that was over all of them, so they were all breathing the same air, and they were kind of trying to stay dry. They were all sopping wet, and it was like temperature was in the high 30s, so it was cold out, and everybody in the stands had umbrellas, but it was difficult because, you know, the rain was kind of blowing sideways. And the next day, my daughter was coughing. That was on a Wednesday. And then she is coughing on Thursday. And then on Friday, she says, I can't go to school. And she doesn't miss school. You know, she said she couldn't go to school. She was sick. And we took her into the doctor. She had 101 fever. I was talking to the doctor and said, well, you got a lot of this stuff going around. I said, well, you know what? I just had something like 10 cases. They had classical swine flu symptoms, and they all just had, you know, upper respiratory tract infections. And I said, I don't know, there's a lot of swine flu going around. Why do you think that they didn't have swine flu? Well, we did a swab, we sent them out, they all came out negative. And I said, I think you guys have a swabbing issue. And he didn't take that comment very kindly, and he just kind of looked at me and didn't really want to talk a whole lot more after that. And I said, well, he's got 101 temperature. He's fatigued. He's been coughing. She's tired enough that she wouldn't go to school. I think she'll test positive. And they took the nasopharyngeal swab, and then the next day she didn't play. They had a game on Saturday. I went and did the stats, and there's always two parents doing the stats on the sidelines, and the other parent was a doctor. And she was coughing. She was coughing a lot. And
I remember this part.
And I said, what do you think you have? And she said, I don't know. I got whatever my daughter has. You know, daughter was on the team too. And I said, well, what do you think you both have? And she said, I don't know. You got
that
something going around. And I said, well, what are you taking for it? And she said Tammy flu. And so she knew exactly what she had. And
sure
I knew
did.
Exactly what she had. And I knew exactly what her daughter had. Mm-hmm. And that afternoon, I started coughing. And the next day on Sunday, I couldn't stop coughing. And I basically took some Tamiflu also. And
you just happened to have some laying around, did you?
No, I definitely had some laying around. I'd gotten it when I'd gone to China, and it was I kind of took one or two of the tablets, you have 10, and I kind of figured, well, I'm just going overreacting. Now they were coughing in China too, but this was prior to the
sounds like a new movie
outbreak.
Coughing
and,
in China.
Oh, they were coughing a lot. I was in Beijing. I was on the runway, and you couldn't see the terminal. The terminal was maybe 50 feet away.
And you couldn't see it. Jeez.
No, you couldn't see. Everything was real fuzzy. Yeah, you just saw this hazy stuff. But in any event, I did stop taking it after one or two. And so I had the remainder of that prescription. I had gotten another one. So I had Tamiflu in the house. And I had actually started my daughter on Tamiflu before she got diagnosed. And so each time they got diagnosed, I got, whatever they started on replaced with a new prescription. So I got a new prescription. But in any event, mine kind of broke that night. I went, I had night sweats, and I had a real low-grade temperature. I had like 99 or so, and maybe 99-something. And the temperature went away, the achiness went away, everything went away but the cough. The cough didn't go away, but everything else did. And I felt better, and I had called the doctor, and I had an appointment set up for Tuesday, and I was feeling a lot better by Monday. And I called him and said, well, you know, I feel a lot better. Should I come in? And he said, oh, yeah, you should come in anyway. We'll go ahead and take a look. And I thought for sure, since I'd already been on Tamiflu for a couple days, I thought, well, they can go ahead and do the swabbing, which, you know, wasn't that, it was a deep kind that was going into your brain type of stuff. But they went and did the swab, and it took a while. I mean, they swabbed me on Tuesday. They had swabbed my daughter on the Friday before that. I ended up calling like on Friday to see if there were any results. And they ended up giving me my daughter's results. And they said she was positive. And then they found my results and said I was positive. And then soon my wife and other daughters started coughing, and they didn't even go in. We just called and got a Tamiflu, and they started on that. And everybody did recover, and it didn't last that long. I mean, my daughter actually went back to school on that Monday, so she just missed that one day of school. And the bottom line was everybody got the virus in October, and absentee rates were 10-15%. It applied to the students and to the teachers and staff. University of Pittsburgh Medical Center did a survey where they tested samples that had been collected for a variety of reasons. They were basically looking at samples from school-aged children. They had an antibody test for the swine flu antibody, and they got 40% of the samples were positive for swine flu antibody, and this was all done before the vaccine was available. And so that's exactly what happened. So the coughing was because people were infected with the virus, but they weren't that sick yet. And then they got a month and a half later, they got infected again. And they had a higher titer of the virus, and the virus took hold, and they developed symptoms, and they got tested, and they were positive. And I remember they were lined up at the nurse's office, and if they had 100.4 temperature, they sent them home. If they didn't, they gave them cough drops. it was crazy.
Cough drops.
But because they had a sore throat, and they didn't have. And, you know, they had a temperature of 199 something. So they had a fever, but they had to get up to 100.4 to get sent home. So they gave them cough drops and sent them back to class so they could infect other people. So it did spread through. There was a high absenteeism in the school. And, the same thing's going to happen with COVID. Now, the difference with COVID is people are more concerned about it. There's nobody was wearing masks during swine flu. So the kids are wearing masks, they're keeping their distance. A lot are taking classes at home. So the number of, I mean, the number of buses they're using went from 40 to 25, so they aren't using as many buses because they've got about half the classes is online.
Well,
and thing's going to end up happening. It's not going to be probably quite as dramatic because they are taking precautions, but the numbers are going to go up and I mean, your stories kind of tell the story. The Florida is opening up the restaurants, which is one of the worst places you can go. And, you know, they can go up to 100% capacity now, even though Florida is still one of the most hard hit states. Florida is still reporting 3,000 cases a day.
DeSantis must have made a decision that he's just going to let the virus run wild.
I was building the wall, Bryce, when they made the decision. Daddy, why can't I go to school? So anyway, the one that made the decision is Trump. DeSantis just, you know, following instructions.
Yeah, and well, so they're just going to open it up and let it run. I think that's the answer.
Right.
I think that's what they're doing.
Well, they're going to open it up, it's going to run, and I don't know if they're going to be able to let it run. Because once you start opening it up, things, they're already going up. Just to give you the numbers now, remember it got up to 40,000 cases or so, and was projected to go above. Well, today we got 55,000 cases. So there are 55,000 today. It's not even complete. I don't have the latest update on California. I've only got 2,000 cases as of 4:30 today. So there's a good chance Florida will add 2,000 or 3,000 more. So it'll be pushing 60,000 by the end of the day today. 60,000 is getting close to the peak. And it's just getting started. And it's going to be like the swine flu. There wasn't that much in the spring for the swine flu, and there wasn't even that much at the beginning of the school year. It took until about October or so when things started rolling. Now, the same thing's happening here. He's opening up the restaurants. Pac-12 said, well, you know, maybe we will play football in the fall. So they're getting ready to start up. My guess is the Big Ten will follow. You know, some of the students that have gotten sick, they're starting to get better. And some of the schools, they say, well, you know, we had a bunch of cases and it seems to be going down a little bit. And that's going to be just like swine flu in 2009. You know, they basically kind of had a mild version when school opened up. And then you got a high enough level that it started infecting people with a higher viral load, and they weren't able to shake things off with just a cough, and they developed a fever, and they had a lot of flu-like symptoms, and they got tested, and sure enough, they tested positive. And so the same thing's going to happen this fall. And this is going to be the fall wave. There was a paper you sent me yesterday about Houston and mutant, and it was kind of taken over and da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, as soon as I saw the headline, I knew that they were talking about the Italian strain. And that's exactly what they were talking about. And
well, they're only six months behind. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, what they did in the I mean, most media stories that come out are done in association with a publication. And in the case of COVID, these are preprints essentially. These are manuscripts that are put out on journals that have the information. It's got the article, but it hasn't been peer reviewed yet, or in some cases, it hasn't even been submitted for peer review yet. And so you can kind of see the data early. It hasn't been cleaned up, and some of them are just nonsense papers. In this case, they sequenced about 5,000 samples in the Houston area, and they had done an earlier wave, and the earlier wave had been in March or so, and at that time, about 70% of the samples were from the Italian strain, and then they kind of had this big burst of activity that began in June and is still ongoing. And then they found that it was close to 99% of the samples were the Italian strain. So they had the Italian strain there already, but it went up from 70% to 99%. So that was one of the take homes, and that's kind of what was used to describe the article. Now, as it turned out, they were also finding some additional mutations in the spike protein, which they had a monoclonal antibody that was neutralizing. And then they tested that monoclonal antibody on some of the mutated versions that had some changes in the spike protein. And they didn't neutralize. The virus is evolving away, and so by the time the vaccine's ready, you know, it's not clear how well the vaccine's going to work with the current virus. It might work with the original virus, but the current virus is starting to evolve away. And unfortunately, that's what happens when you have a pandemic, and it happens more dramatically when you have a pandemic in a country where the management is a disaster, as in the U.S., which allowed U.S. to be number one in the world in cases and number one in the world in deaths. And they're going to be number one in the world in mutations. And they're going to be number one in the world in the virus that's evolved away from the vaccine. And by the time the vaccine's ready, it's not going to work, because they need a new vaccine, because there's a new sequence, because the new virus is resistant to the vaccine made against the original virus. So that was one of the takeaways from this article on what's going on in Houston. And the other takeaway was that there's also resistance to remdesivir. And remdesivir doesn't target the spike protein. It targets the polymerase enzyme. And they found some mutations in the polymerase enzyme, and that polymerase was no longer susceptible to remdesivir. And that's what happened when you use just one protease inhibitor, that when you're using one drug. Same thing happened with AZT and HIV. You do one drug, and you end up selecting for a resistant version of the virus. And the same things happen with COVID already. So because there's not multiple drugs, they're not using a cocktail, they're just trying one. When they do one, they end up selecting the virus that's not susceptible, and then you end up developing remdesivir resistant strain. So the virus in Houston is already becoming resistant to remdesivir and already becoming resistant to the antibody that was directed against the original strain. And those types of selection of mutations happen much quicker when the virus is out of control. So when the virus is in humans, and the U.S. has had 7 million confirmed cases now. So when you got 7 million cases, you've got a lot of different mutations that are out there. And if the mutation gives the virus a selective advantage against the immune response to the original one, that virus will take over, and all of a sudden you'll have a virus that's resistant to the vaccine and a virus that's resistant to the antivirals. And so those are two warning signals, and that's frequently what happens in the second wave. What happens in the second wave is 100% of the population susceptible. It doesn't matter whether you were infected once or whether you were infected twice or you were infected three times. Because the antibodies you have for the original virus, number one, you didn't have that much virus. You didn't mount that much of antibody to begin with. And number two, the virus has evolved away so that the antibodies you had against the original don't really work very well against the new version. And therefore, the new version has free sailing, that basically nobody has any immunity. There's been time to select for versions that are at higher titers. And so people get infected with a higher viral load. They'll still have the mutation they'll still have the polybasic cleavage site, so they'll be able to go into multiple cell types. They'll still have the mutation that's on the Italian strain. They'll still have position 614 change from D to G. But they'll have additional mutations layered on top of those, and the additional mutations will allow it to evolve away from the existing immunity. And that's why when you have pandemics, it's common for them to be multiple waves, and it's common for the second and third waves to be slightly different and to kind of evade the immune response and able to take off because they've had more time to adapt. And when you've got a situation like this president of the U.S., where you've had 7 million cases, and there's a lot of virus floating around, and the virus it recombines and it moves these mutations from one to the other, right, and it finds different combinations, and it comes up with the right combination, and then you've got a new wave, and you've got problems. And then
well,
you got guys.
You can't say many
nice
things for
like
Trump.
You got guys like DeSantos.
At least you can say that Trump didn't say 200 million Americans have died of coronavirus so far.
Right, right. He's not going to talk about that. What he's going to do is he's going to pretend it doesn't exist.
Well, that was Biden who said that.
And he's going to. No, it's Trump that says it. He says it every time
Biden
he has a rally.
Biden said 200 million have died so far. Biden has got problems. Yeah. Anyway, let's leave it.
Yeah. Trump says that the virus isn't a problem. He's
that's right.
Nobody 18 and under is affected by it.
Right.
They've got great immunity. And it's really not a problem with the schools.
He's still not talking about giving masks to all Americans. You'll notice that has never come up.
Well, the only time he talks about the masks is at the rallies where they have the people that sit behind him and are on the camera. They wear masks. The rest of the rally doesn't wear masks. And now he's going back indoors. So he's not only holding an outdoor rally where there is still a problem because mm-hmm. people are there for several hours and there's no social distancing. They're right, sitting yeah. literally shoulder to shoulder. But now I think he's in Virginia tonight, and so the Virginia venue is indoor. And so he's ignoring the virus, and he's basically back to having rallies. And he's not limiting the rallies to outdoor venue. He's going back indoors. And he's just traveling.
It's the Herman Cain technique.
Right, right. It works like a charm. 10 days, you'll be in the hospital, and 3 weeks later, you're dead. You know, it's remarkable that he's got these followers convinced that A, they don't need a mask. B, they ridicule people that do have a mask, including Trump ridiculing Biden. And C, they get packed in and go to these and think, you can't see it. How bad could it be? Or if you're going to get it, you're going to get it anyway. It's just like getting the flu. It's not a big deal. You know, have some flu-like symptoms for a couple of days and you'll be good to go. And the problem, as you know, is that it's got this polybasic plebiscite. So it's not really limited to the respiratory system.
He's just got carte blanche to your whole damn body. Come on, this is really not good.
And it can create all of these additional problems that there's very little data on what the long-term effects are. And there's also very little data on, well, if you had it and you seem to have recovered, what happens when you get that virus again? And you've got you've had your heart attack, and maybe you're repairing it. Like I said, it's not my area. I'm not sure how permanent the damage is, but there is some damage there. And if 3 months later, you get the same virus, you know, slightly different version of the virus, but essentially you get SARS-CoV-2 again, and it goes back to your heart. What happens when you have a myocarditis the second time? And it's literally less than a year after you had it the first time. Does your heart just kind of say, we got this again, it's not a problem, or does it create additional damage and make the heart more susceptible to the second? Right. So, So the issue is nobody really knows the answers to those questions. They know enough that that's a good question to ask, but they don't know enough to say, well, this is what's going to happen when you have it the second time, especially this is what's going to happen when you have a worse version of it. And that was the example I gave, was that the guy had a fairly mild version the first time he was infected. Mm-hmm. And the second time he ended up in the hospital, and he had difficulty walking. And he seems to have recovered from that. But the two infections that he had were only about, 6 weeks apart or so. And they were both, in the springtime. He hasn't been infected yet in the fall to see if, A, he's got enough immunity to avoid getting infected. And, B, if he does get infected, is what's going to happen the third time. And that's some of the information that's going around. The information that's going around is that people are getting infected multiple times. And in many instances, the second time they're infected is significantly worse than the first time. And
the long-term, here's the question, Henry. The long-term results of these multiple infections, 1, 2, 3, whatever, and possible heart damage. We've talked about this. Does the heart heal itself? There is some indication that the heart can. We don't know. This is uncharted water. So does the multitude of infections in this country, asymptomatic or otherwise, ultimately end up in a generic lowering of life expectancy? across the board. I don't know. Well, Nobody knows.
Well, what you do know is that COVID is the third leading cause of death in the United States. So that gives you an idea how many people are dying. It's not this, that they're dying because they're old, or they're dying because they've got an underlying condition, and it's really the underlying condition, which is what Trump says. Trump says, the ones that are dying are old, and they've got heart problems, or they've got some other problem, and it's the other problem that ends up killing them, is what his claim is. It's just nonsense. And, like I said, risk factors are obesity or asthma. Most of the people that are obese and have asthma don't end up dying, a month or two after they're diagnosed. They end up dying a month or two after they're infected with COVID. They don't die because they're 30, 40 pounds overweight. They die because they've got a virus and they can't really handle the virus, and the overweight, the obesity doesn't help them, but it isn't what kills them. It's the virus that kills them. So the issue is that these numbers are starting to go up. It's not really clear what the long-term effects are, especially of multiple infections. And people think that it's over. I mean, Trump says we've turned the corner, and this is behind us now, and we can start getting back to normal. And so you got guys like DeSantis who says, if it's over, we can go eat in restaurants. We can put the restaurants up at 100% capacity. And they're doing this in these states that have these numbers that are going up. Just to give you an idea, I'll give you a quick rundown.
Yeah. Right.
These are the results for today, and these are the numbers. I'll just take the ones that had at least 1,000 cases today. Now, California, I've only got 2,790. But that'll go up. That's as of 4 o'clock local time. So those numbers will go up. But here's the rest. There are the full numbers for today. Michigan had 1,040. Illinois had 2,405. Florida, where restaurants are wide open, they only had 4,847 cases with 122 deaths today. Texas is 4,633. Georgia's got 1,468. Ohio had 1,150. Indiana had 1,171. Tennessee had 1,910. North Carolina, I don't know if this is an anomaly or if they did something that they added. They had 6,142 today. Missouri had 1,765. Alabama had 2,452. Wisconsin, where they're going through the roof, now they're not getting 1,000 a day. They're getting 2,000 a day, heading for 3,000 a day. They had 2,504 today. South Carolina had 1,196. Utah had 1,411. Minnesota had 1,177. Kansas had 1,366. Oklahoma had 1,276. So that's a lot of states that had over 1,000 cases today. And some of them are getting more towards the 2,000 to 3,000 cases. Mm-hmm. And the higher ones are in the 3,000 to 4,000 cases. And it's only going to go up. These states that are reporting over 1,000 cases, they haven't turned the corner and going down. I mean, the three highest ones are off their peaks, but they're not going down very quickly. And if you open up all the restaurants and you've got the kids going back to school and you got more parents going back to work, all of these numbers are going to go up because it's going to get cooler.
All right, let's
people
extrapolate.
Are going to spend more time inside.
6 weeks till the election. They're now talking, the Democrats are actually talking about in-person voting. They're beginning to swing around now. We need in-person voting. They're backing away from the mail-in.
Well, they're
so,
they're
my point is, in six
Trump,
weeks,
yeah.
if what you're projecting happens, half the people going in to vote are going to be infected, asymptomatically or otherwise.
Right. So, I mean, what they're doing is they're swapping out the personnel at the polling places. That the elderly
put Boy Scouts in there now
because
they never get it right.
They've got millennials, so millennials are volunteering to man the polling, and so they're swapping out. So they'll be younger. They'll have social distancing. And so, you know, when you're standing in line, there'll be a gap between you and the person in front and behind you. Everybody, I think, will be required to wear masks, you know. And, you know, the idea is that they're going to try to get people to do in-person early voting in many cases. And so they're going to try to spread it out because they've got these volunteers there. Mm-hmm. Some states are actually opening up more polling places as opposed to last. So they have more locations. And you know, people get there. They've extended the regulations for receipt of a early or by mail ballot that it has to be postmarked by the 3rd, and then they give it like 5 days after that it has to be in by. So they're not saying they have to receive it by the day. It just has to get to the post office, and you're not going to lose your vote because it took 5 days for them to deliver it. You know, well, if it takes more than 5 days, you are. But you know, a lot of them are extending it a little bit longer. So they're trying to spread it out so it won't be as long a wait in line. You can basically pick an earlier date that it won't have that much. But there have been long waits already. I mean, it'll probably be record numbers of voting. And
sure. Only 50% voted in 2016. That's all.
But I think you're right about, you know, what things are going to look like by November. By November, I think that it's not necessarily going to be everywhere at the same time. It may be everywhere, but it'll probably be December, January, maybe even February, where it's going to be, you know, very, very widespread all over the place. In November, it might be somewhat scattered. So some of these states, like Wisconsin's a good example. Wisconsin's going through the roof. I'm not sure that they're going to be going down by then. And even if the new cases is plateaued, it'll probably be plateaued at a very high level. And by November, you'll start seeing the deaths because there's, you know, pretty close to 3-4 week lag between the numbers going up as far as cases are concerned and the number of deaths start to go up. So by November, the deaths will start going up. So people will be concerned that it hasn't gone away. It hasn't turned the corner. And in all likelihood, there won't be a vaccine available.
Not one worth risking, in my view. Too soon.
Well, I don't know that. I don't even know if there's going to be anything to risk because, you know, the problem that AstraZeneca had in the UK, they ended up halting it for 6 days, and now they've kind of resumed. And some of the other countries have resumed, like India and South America, or South Africa, I should say, and I think Brazil. But the U.S. has not resumed. And the fact that they have not started up that trial yet is A, indicating that they're not that convinced that the first case that they said was undiagnosed MS was MS that was there before they got treated, as opposed to the treatment gave rise to the MS. And then it's the same thing with the transverse myelitis with the second case, where they say, well, we haven't really confirmed that that's what the person had. That was what their symptoms were. But they still haven't said what that person had. And the trial is still closed here. And the general consensus is, at least as far as the AstraZeneca vaccine is concerned, it's three strikes and you're out. And so if they get another case that has this transverse myelitis, they're not going to get approved. And if they don't get approved, then there's going to be a cloud hanging over all the other trials.
All of it. All of it.
And Dr. Trump is not going to be able to just say, well, you know, I think this is all political, and therefore you should go ahead and take the vaccine, even if the FDA says they don't want to approve it, which is what he's trying to say now. He says he can override the FDA now. So only I can fix it, but that's the latest from...
Real quick. People are asking, if you were to take an airline flight or travel a distance, what mask would you use? What is your mask of choice? N95?
Yeah, you want to use an N95 mask. If you can get them. I mean, they're not that available. But that would be the recommendation. Because that protects you more than just others from you. And the airlines are going to require a mask no matter what.
Okay.
I mean, one kind or another. Okay.
Have a good weekend. So, you take care.
You too. We'll see what happens next week. Okay, take care.
All right, good night. Okay, and that's it for the week. Wow. Please prepare. You still have a little time left. Don't delay. Get some food put away and the other things that we've talked about. All right? Talk soon.